This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah. And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio, now we have masks.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 105 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we really don't want to talk to you, interact with you, or even acknowledge your existence. So just go about your business, do whatever it is you do with your odd little lives, and remain blissfully unaware of the tremendous efforts that we make to keep you safe and secure without a word of thanks, huh? Fine? Fine. We didn't really want them anyway. All right, you bastards. In the callous and uncaring GPR studios this evening, my name is Keir. With me, as always, is Haley. Haley, how are you this evening?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
To hear. I am outstanding, rock solid. And over there in the corner, slyly rocking back and forth to himself because he saw an eight-legged thing, is Jay. Jay, how are you, sir?
Slightly traumatized, but I'll get through. I'm all right.
It's okay. They don't have souls. We've established this. What's going on tonight?
Well, today we're sitting back and enjoying watching the sparks fly, literally and figuratively, when the two halves of Clara's world come crashing together in Episode 5, The Caretaker. She's done a Herculean job of keeping the two men in her life from intersecting, but we all know it would be a matter of time, pun intended, before the clash occurred. The Doctor loathes soldiers and Danny Pink doesn't do weird. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, sure.
Sounds like a good time.
Well, initial feedback we got from a lot of the people that were kind of chiming in as they watched was that this was pretty well received across the board, right? Have we heard any dissenters, really?
No, everybody was relatively pleased with this. I mean, there were no, holy crap, this was amazing, but we didn't really expect that from this episode. It was good. I mean, it was just a fun episode that really didn't cause any of the divisiveness that most of the series has.
Which is interesting, because it definitely had the potential to do so. I mean, this is one where you're taking two very important little components of the current dynamic of the show, mm-hmm. and putting them into literally stark contrast against one another. So they've been setting up for all the previous episodes how much the Doctor has this serious distaste towards soldiers. And all throughout this episode, that keeps kind of getting, you know, sharpened. Mm-hmm. And Danny straying away from anything that qualifies as weird or unusual or dishonest. You know, he's got a very, very strong honesty trait to him. So, you know, this was built to be something kind of explosive. How do we feel that got pulled off?
I mean, it kind of did wind up being explosive at times. I mean, you think about when Danny snuck onto the TARDIS and with the invisibility watch and... That did not go over well.
No, it's great. Outright shouting at one another.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Danny taking on the mocking him as an officer sort of thing with the saluting and the military yeah. protocol. And you could see how quickly that just dug right under the Doctor's skin. And the whole shut up, leave us alone, you know, stay out of our way kind of an argument. That was,
yeah.
We knew that this was going to happen. I personally was very pleased at the fact that the episode did not stay mired in the killer robot story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, while that was there as a vehicle to kind of keep the plot moving along, it was really about watching this triangle mm-hmm. Try and solidify itself.
Yeah. And I mean, I really think that Gareth Roberts has found his niche in writing for Doctor Who. You know, it's take the Doctor, insert him into everyday life, and try and pass off being a normal human being. And, you know, watch what happens after that. And I mean, with the Lodger and closing time, we kind of saw how that played out in an average life. This time we actually get to see it with a companion. So it worked really well this time. You know, like you said, the robot was there, you know, incrementally, and it was really only to drive the story along. They needed something to move the plot, and that worked. And when they didn't need it, hey, it's not there. You know, it's hiding or it's flung into the future or whatever. It's just, it worked really well.
It disappeared in a plot vortex when they didn't need it and came back when they did.
Exactly.
You guys feeling slow yet? I'm back. Okay. Am I good to come back? All right. All right. This is obviously being, as you mentioned, Gareth Roberts writing, you know, or taking the lead point on script credit, but this was also one of Moffat's pens as well. Do you, either of you kind of feel that there were certain points where you could tell whose hand was, you know, at the keyboard at any given moment?
Just given the influence that we've seen from Moffat before now, I think the moments with Clara and Danny when he's, you know, once he's learned about when they're in the apartment staring at the window and then again sitting on the couch after everything had happened, I thought that those were really Moffat, you know, shaping the relationship between those two and using everything that had come to kind of drive some points. And, beyond that, I want to give all the credit I can to Roberts because it all did seem to fit seamlessly.
Well, you could tell, obviously, if you go back and you watch, you know, Lodger Closing Time, and you can see some of those great little, the banter bits or mm-hmm. the moments where they're sort of, where the sentences have the obvious jab that's written into it and then the humor in the subtext that really has neither character in the scene laughing, but it's entirely for our amusement.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had loads of them through this. I mean, there were all these great little snipes and funny little comments, you know, and even the Courtney Woods character and whatnot. And just things that you kind of, you know, you get a little enjoyment out of that I think were probably, you know, were Gareth all over. But you did mention that scene where they're kind of staring out at the window after she finally breaks it all down for Danny. And I give a lot of credit, as well to Paul Murphy as the director on this one. I think this is his first, is this his first time at the helm?
I can't recall.
I think it might be. He's worked on other
works. I know I've heard his name before. I just can't remember if I've heard it in conjunction with Doctor Who.
I'll have to check IMDb later. But yes, but in terms of being able to sort of take that look and the way it was framed, and again, you know, we're noticing how they're staying true to form about slowing down the pace of some of these scenes and letting the drama hang there and really seek its own level. I'm really pleased with that, how that scene played out. But if that's Moffat writing what he does best, which is the real dirty, squidgy bits of people's inner emotions and how they interact, and you know, Danny's discussion about, you know, you can really tell how you rate with someone or what someone thinks of you by the lies they've told you. And that's all very kind of insightful, very Moffat stuff. But I think it got worked very well in this episode. I really enjoyed all the times when we got very introspective, even mm-hmm. though it didn't have a lot of adventure to carry us along. We needed this episode, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that was part of the thing that I was looking forward to was just that character development and the personal connection kind of stuff that we were expecting to get from this. And it really did deliver on that. So Haley, what did you think about this episode?
I enjoyed it a lot. It kind of reminded me just a little bit of an Unearthly Child, because you've got the doctor pulling together like a couple of teachers and then a young kid to be his, you know, away team.
All right.
I mean, not a lot. Just
thank. Yeah. Well, let's just thank Christ that the disruptive influence is not like Barbara, really.
Yeah.
Much less shrieking so far.
That's true. Just more spillage.
She was right there at the door.
That's a good point. And then my scientific mind kind of kicked in because I've been reading a lot of, I just finished reading, I forget her name, Mary Roach's book, Packing for Mars, mm-hmm. all about the inner workings of the NASA program and astronaut selection and such. And they were talking, there's an entire chapter, related towards barfing in a spacesuit and how it could potentially kill you. So as I'm watching her start to, you know, puff up at the doorway there, I'm thinking that's probably good that she doesn't barf into a zero G environment, because it'll just float in front of her and she'll breathe it back in and choke on it.
No, it
these,
wouldn't.
These are the things that go.
The TARDIS has gravity. It would fall and then probably pass through the air shield and, you know, then float off into space and burn up in some planet's atmosphere and, you know, cause a plague that they can't cure.
Or be the start of a new civilization.
Yeah. Something like, oh, geez.
Oh, we've got a new piece of tech in this episode now. We've got the InvisoWatch.
Right, because it never would have been useful before now.
Hadn't thought of it. 2,000 years kicking around. I just had this great idea.
What if I can turn invisible at times when I don't want to be seen? Yeah.
That wouldn't be helpful at all. When could that possibly come in handy?
Well, let's place your bets now. Get your shiny quarter out and tell us which piece of newly invented or at least expanded technology. Are we going to see the InvisiWatch yet, or are we going to have the touchy-feely TARDIS console?
I feel like
we might see the Invisibling watch again, but it's going to be when it breaks.
That's a good point.
I didn't wind it. Damn.
And I do have to say, I don't remember who it was that brought this to my attention, but the telepathic controls and the TARDIS control board, they weren't designed specifically for that episode. Apparently, when they redesigned the TARDIS for Matt Smith at halfway through Series 7, that was actually included in the schematics, everything that they did. And there was a like behind the scenes kind of thing or something. I think it was in Doctor Who magazine or something where they showed the different panels, and it was in there and it was labeled as telepathic circuits. So this wasn't something that was just thrown in there because they needed a plot device. It was something that was there for quite a while. It just hadn't gotten used until then.
Right.
So whoever it was that brought to my attention, I'm sorry that I'm somebodying you, but I do appreciate that. And thanks for calling us out.
That brilliant person.
Yes.
Who will remain nameless.
Feel free to call me out on Twitter and tell me that it was me, you.
So what are some of the great takeaway lines that we've gotten from this that kind of that allowed us to get the most out of this episode? I know there were quotes aplenty.
Oh, yeah.
But some of them were really kind of poignant as far as what they were trying to address.
I just love the whole interplay at the beginning when they're, you know, when Claire runs onto the TARDIS and she's wanting to go and the doctor starts being nice to her. It's like, why are you being nice? Because it works on you.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty important statement. You know, we've had a lot of people that have been sort of chiming in with us saying, you know, he's all right, there's gruff and then there's just outright mean. Mm-hmm. And when is he going to kind of soften around the edges to her? Maybe this, granted, he's doing it for kind of a self-serving purpose because it gets things done. You mm-hmm. get, you know, catch more flies with honey than you do, you know, but at least he's trying.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
He made the effort. It's progress.
Yeah. And his face looks funny when he's being sweet. It's just weird.
Yeah, like that smile he had when she was walking away with not Matt Smith.
Yeah, it was all contorted. And
it was a little unnerving.
Yeah, he had gas or something.
then the whole interchange in the teacher's lounge too, when she comes back in, you know, the whole, so you recognize me, that you're wearing a different coat.
It was funny because earlier he had asked why she had two coats.
Yes.
Is one of them faulty?
So we all seem to have picked up on the one line about when he's describing that they could go to, he once spent a year living with otters because he had a fight with River.
Yeah.
So there's your only appearance.
Yeah, probably so.
And until we find out that Missy is actually River.
Yeah. Well, here's what, and again, I'm going to overanalyze it because that's what we do. Does that mean, is he just recalling something from, you know, previous regen? Or has he had crossovers with River that we just don't see on camera? Doesn't matter.
No, I'm thinking that the last time that he actually saw her was in the name of the Doctor. So I'm guessing it's probably from the previous regeneration.
Okay.
But I do like the way that they dropped her in. Like, she's still a part of the story. We just might not see her anymore. And it makes sense. You know, Clara knew River through, you know, some wibbly wobbly stuff. But, you know, she understands. He can say River and she knows who he's talking about. So it makes sense that they would have that kind of exchange. And I thought it was really well done and understated and much better than actually, like, bringing her in for a flashback or something.
Which I would still be fine with it because I love Alex Kingston.
Oh, well, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that could be a nice, you know, series finale reveal kind of thing. You know, we kept her under a dark hood on the set and everything, and all of a sudden she just pops up. But so you're mentioning these kind of understated lines that are thrown in there, and one of the other things that I kind of I thought it was sort of ringing in the back of my head, and I did note a couple of bloggers who had picked up on it as well. The fact that Danny specifically is a veteran soldier who has gone on to take a civilian life as a math teacher. And the Doctor, you know, gives him so much grief for that. You know, obviously the whole PE gag that kind of runs through it, or him intentionally not being able to remember his name and all the things the Doctor does when the Doctor doesn't know if he likes someone. But the Brig mm-hmm. was a career soldier who in his retiring years became a maths teacher at a secondary school.
Right.
And they're not making any of these connections right now other than this disdain for soldiers all along through the series. We know that at some point we're going to have Kate Lethbridge Stewart back. Mm-hmm. She's credited at some point within the season. And I'm wondering if there's going to be a point where they call him out specifically and say, have you kind of forgotten this huge element of your interaction with humans over the years? And it's going to come to a head.
I think they have to. They can't just ignore the fact that he's been okay with soldiers in the past and now he's not.
Well, and I don't think it's so much that as it is that they've spent a lot of time this series talking about how much he dislikes soldiers. And you can't put that much effort into saying, you know, how horrible he is or how horrible it is for him and then throw him in with UNIT and expect it all to be a seamless, cohesion. Mm-hmm. So I do expect that they're going to have to say something.
We don't know exactly when that interchange is going to happen, right? They haven't attributed her to a specific episode, have they?
I don't think so. My best guess is that she's going to wind up coming in the last two episodes of the series.
Right.
Just given the stories that we have coming up and how many episodes we have left, it just seems like that's probably going to be the best fit.
I'll do a little background research while we're chatting. go ahead.
So let's go ahead and get this out of the way. I mean, I know we talked about her, running back into the TARDIS to vomit, but Courtney Woods seemed a bit like shoehorned in almost in this episode. Like there wasn't much reason for her to be there except for comedic element number one, comedic element number two.
Right.
Yeah. She didn't serve any purpose in the plot and I know that everybody's thinking it, but she reminded me a lot of Angie and Artie.
I wonder if it was supposed to be Angie and Artie, and they were hated so much that they decided to change it to Courtney.
You know, I had that thought, too. I really had thought that out. No, I don't know, but I did like the exchange between the doctor and her because they just, neither one of them liked the other one, and they didn't hide it at all. And they just, constant sniping back and forth, and it was actually much more enjoyable. Granted, I still wouldn't mind seeing her get spaced, but, it was more enjoyable than anything we'd seen with the other two.
Yeah. This is definitely a step in the right direction getting away from Angie and Artie, but it took me two passes through the episode before I was really able to accept disruptive influence because, as you said, it seemed like she was kind of cut into the script for the sake of appealing to younger viewers. Mm-hmm. So that at least they're still a part of the program in some way.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling it's going to happen from time to time. Because you've got a cast that sort of shifts to an older dynamic as far as the average age on the cast, even though, you and I looked exactly the same age. but they're going to have that touchstone every once in a while with a youth audience.
And, I don't mind that. My thing is the fact that she seemed so out of place, or not out of place, but it seemed like she didn't serve any purpose in the story, that it reminded me very much of the end of Crimson Horror when they just slammed the other two on there so that it would make sense when they showed up in the next episode.
Well, they've been using her. They've been using this actress for Courtney in all of the episodes that take place or have a scene in Coal Hill to date.
Yeah. Isn't she the same one that was in her Clara's flashback?
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense because she hadn't been to that school before, but whatever.
Well, there was another little continuity thing when they were sitting down for parents' night and her parents were saying to Danny that, well, last year you called her a very disruptive influence. Well, he wasn't there last year.
I wrote that off as saying, I've said that to my kids' teachers before, even though you didn't have them 2 years ago, but it's the royal kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, how much time passed in that little montage at the beginning? A couple months maybe?
Maybe. I mean, they still, Clara and Danny don't seem like they're in an established relationship. It still seems like it's relatively new, but
except, she calls him, she doesn't say they're dating. She calls him her boyfriend. And then she says she loves him.
Yeah. But did you see his face when she said that?
Yeah,
well, yeah, it was obviously the first time.
Yeah. And then
it never gets discussed again.
And then right after that, when, the doctor said that he thought she was dating Adrian and Clara says, he's so not my type. Did you see the doctor's face at that point? oh, really? And just some great, great acting between all of them at that point. And I do have to say that I feel like Danny had the most realistic response to the doctor and the TARDIS and to aliens and everything else than anyone else on the show before now. You know, he was scared. He was panicky. He didn't know what to think. He wanted answers and he wanted them now, and he wasn't dealing with anything until he got it. I mean, it felt like a very real response to, holy crap, my girlfriend travels around space and time with an alien. What the heck?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
To circle back on this, just to let you know, I found a quick interview that Gemma Redgrave did with Blog to Who back in July, and she's going to be in the finale.
Okay.
And I remember now, because there were a couple of those promo photos of going around with, in the same frame, you saw Redgrave, Capaldi, Scary Poppins, and Cybermen in the background.
Right, yeah.
So you've got all of that coming to a head somehow.
Yep.
Did they say which one's going to be the two-parter yet? I can't remember.
It's the series finale.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes, it's the end, and then the end of the end.
The beginning of the end, really, and then the end of the beginning.
Yeah, a S.H.I.E.L.D. reference.
Wondered if you were going to catch that one.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It'll never take off.
But all right, so we did actually get Scary Poppins returning again.
But yeah, she was very busy that day.
Busy that day and did not have that creepy smile on.
Yeah.
Which makes her less disturbing.
Yeah. We get to see a little bit more of the fact that this is an operation. This is a structure. This is not just her little, you know, piece of weird floating out there somewhere. They apply another name to it now. It's first time it's no longer being referred to as Heaven or the Promised Land or anything like that. Now they also say that, you know, this underling who speaks up, I don't think they ever gave him a name or anything. He didn't have a placard on his desk. Says he prefers to refer to it as the Nether Sphere.
Yeah. But, you know, they accept all of them, that the afterlife, the Promised Land, you know, it's basically saying that all the different interpretations of Nirvana and Heaven or whatnot are all of this place. So.
Right. I was kind of seeing it as they're sort of setting this up as being, because this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. If they're all going through there, and it doesn't really matter who they were, you know, in their previous existence. If they're going to start to get into this kind of philosophical existential discussion here, it's a kind of a new direction for the show, and that's fine, I guess. But I was kind of taking it as this is like a way station, you know, on the headed
purgatory.
I wonder if they're going something similar with what happened in the library with River and her gang, where this is like a brief, you know, echo or whatever of the people that have died, and they're able to tap into that for a brief period of time, which seems more in step with the, I don't know, character of the show.
Well, okay. One theory. All right. So my theory about, you know, sacrificing yourself just got blown out of the window, because this guy didn't sacrifice himself and didn't have any contact with the doctor either. So that blows a lot of theories out of the water right there.
Except it was a case that the doctor was working on. So it's still vaguely connected.
Vaguely. But one theory that our friend Badger Spoon actually said is that he was thinking that she's more like a rogue time lady or something. And that perhaps through the crack, she was able to get back. And that in the moment of someone's death, it is a time, a space and time there right before they die, that she could grab them. And so it's, well, I mean.
But the bodies are left behind. So she's not really pulling them out of time. We saw the cop's hand, charred hand, drop after he was taken out by the Scovox Blitzer.
It could have been particles from where he was, you know, teleported away, and it just held that shape as they burned.
But what about the half-droid clockwork man who was left impaled on the spire at the top of the church?
Don't insert logic into his argument.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. You know, it's just proof that if they want to get around it, they can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they're not giving us too much to be able to kind of piece apart. Keep it really vague. And because if they start planting too big breadcrumbs, then people are going to start to get, you know, their theories are going to start running in various directions. And then whatever you get handed is not going to make anybody happy.
Yeah.
So if you just keep it really, really cloudy and then bang, here's your solution in the finale or whenever it comes to pass, then you have to accept it. That's what it is.
Yep.
So what else do we kind of pull from this as far as anything developmental among the characters and things that we thought we got out of this, moving the characters forward?
Yeah, I felt like the part where when the doctor says that the alien's gonna, or the robot's gonna come back, and Danny starts to panic, he's like, no, we've gotta call the police, we've gotta call the army or something, and the doctor's like, this is exactly why. Like that, I mean, it just kind of solidified his reasoning as to why this PE teacher is, you know, a horrible person.
Mm-hmm. But then when the dust settles, so to speak, and they get to have their conversation once the threat has been eliminated and they can actually communicate with one another, you know, from across a very large room. Mm. I'm definitely coming around on Danny as far as his potential for a character, not necessarily as a companion. You may never put him in the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. It may just not happen. He's not even going to go like the Mickey route where he's only in there some of the time kind of thing. But he's getting it. He reacted in a way that I thought was more genuine as far as when the whole bigger picture becomes revealed to him. He was lost. He was having a hard time speaking, communicating, walking, mm-hmm. accepting what he saw. It was very human, I guess you could say. But when it came to the Doctor being a straight dick to him, when it came to Clara later on, he really, I think he honed in on it. He's far more perceptive and capable of a character when he, you know, I figured out why it is that he's angry, why it is that he doesn't, you know, that he doesn't know whether or not he's supposed to like me, because I need to be good enough for you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very, very insightful for him, or for them to give his character.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did like the Doctor's response too, that, you know, it's, when Claire's like, well, he did just save the world. And the Doctor's like, yeah, that's a good start. And I want that to be true. I want that to be the start of them getting to know each other. I still want conflict between the two of them. I feel like there was too much underlying tension for them just to brush it away because he did an amazing somersault. You know, it's
the most incredible somersault ever.
I think you guys don't know much about gymnastics. That was a front flip, not a somersault.
Well, whatever. But you,
he saved the world with it. We can call it what we want.
He cleared a 6 foot plus robot leaping off of concrete.
I know. And it wasn't like he did a run and dive. It kind of like he got up to it, stopped, and then jumped.
Somebody's been doing CrossFit. But I want to see some of that, the rough edges as time goes on. Eventually I want to see them like reconciled and actually work well together, but I don't want it to be just, oh, hey, yeah, you helped me with this last one, so I'm okay with you now.
No, I think it's going to be a conflict that we're going to see probably in every episode up to the finale.
I hope so, yeah. Because I love the fact that both of them are intelligent. I mean, Danny's not a stupid person. You could see that when they were on the TARDIS. And, you know, the Doctor could sense the light shield, and he instantly started, you know, really picking at Clara and, you know, pointing out all the times that she'd messed up with Danny and things like that. And Danny's like, you know, just turns it off. He's like, he already knows I'm here. Why else do you think he's bringing that stuff up? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the guy is intelligent, and I want to see more of them working together and then working at cross purposes sometimes.
But note that Danny's intelligence and some of the areas where he really shines are his ability to read people, mm-hmm. and specifically, because that's something that right now the Doctor seems to be kind of hindered on, because if it's not about him, he doesn't pick up on it. Yeah. He seems to be kind of oblivious to a certain percentage that could be a fairly sizable percentage at times of things that are going on around him, because it just doesn't matter in his eyes. You know, that's go back to Claire's line about, you know, when he asks, you know, why do I keep you around? Because the alternative would be developing a conscience of your own, which is, it's a nice zing, yeah. But it kind of fits.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Oh, so. Yeah, I'm kind of pleased with what all three of the characters have gained out of this. You know, the Doctor has realized that there are some things that he's just going to have to accept for the sake of keeping his valued companion with him, and that value is just as apparent now as it's been all along. Mm. Clara admits to loving him, you know, not in that way.
Yeah,
but, you know, that kind of that concern.
And I mean, Danny picked up on that right away. You know, he's like, do you love him? She's like, no, you know, I'm really tired of the lies. Like, he knew that she was hiding something. I don't think that he really suspected it was a romantic relationship, but he was like, you're not telling me everything. So, you know, again, going back to his ability to read people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, as Haley said, as long as that soldier theme is there, there's always going to be wrinkles in the fabric, and that's what they'll continue to kind of work with for the episodes to come, or whenever we end up returning back to Coal Hill School, because I think we've got a break for a little while. But yeah, this is something that they can continue to work with, so that it can be this You know, do I really need to earn your respect or trust, or does it really matter as long as we're both in agreement that we have to be there for her and she's the fulcrum between the two of them?
Yeah.
On the music side of things, mm-hmm. I noticed Raimani and a couple of other folks had kind of picked up, and when Julie and I were watching this, you know, we both kind of turned each other at the same point twice in the episode and said, "Does this sound like we're listening to the score from Sherlock?" Because it kind of had that, you know, kind of plinky adventure is going, the music is going. And you're like, oh, okay, well, hell, all right, this is straight out of Sherlock, which kind of made sense for the scenes that it was happening in. But then at least two or three other people made exactly the same parallel. So it was kind of cool to see that noted.
Yeah. I mean, the music was really similar. And I mean, it did serve the purpose. I thought it fit really well. But yeah, it was definitely like, I've heard this before. Where's John? Where's John? He's got to be here somewhere.
Exactly. And go back. There is the one scene where the doctor is walking across. He's heading back to his caretaker's, you know, little closet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's walking across the big chessboard that they had in school. And he starts whistling to himself. Mm-hmm. Tell me if he is not whistling, you know, the middle eight bars to I Am the Doctor. He just kind of repeats the melody once or twice, and it's almost like he's whistling his own theme song. Just go back and watch it one more time.
I went and I saw your notes on it, and I tried to listen to it, and it maybe, but I don't know.
That would be a fun Easter egg. I don't know.
Yeah, if he did, it was distinct, you know, legally distinct.
I left off the last note.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I loved the parts in the school at the beginning before we really get into the plot where, you know, the doctor's running around and doing his whole thing, climbing in Clara's window and then correcting her on the date that the book was written and stuff.
Because of course he did.
Yeah. What was the quote from Pride and Prejudice? It hung on the screen for a little while, but I wasn't sure if it had any sort of significance as to the passage that they chose.
It was the one about needing a husband. I don't remember it, but that's what it was.
Okay.
So it might have been a little bit, you know, pointing at the relationship aspect. But,
And thank you. They got the quick little reference to Vogons in there. You and the Vogons are going to go running off and you're going to meet Buddy Holly.
No, the Boggins.
Boggins. Was it the Boggins? I thought you said the Vogons.
No, she said the Boggins.
Damn it.
I love that whole little interplay there. It was great, though. I swear I'm going to wind up hanging up a sign somewhere in my house that says, "Go away, humans."
Well, you should never write signs when you're angry.
I thought that was great. It's like, no, look, it says keep out. No, it doesn't. It says go away, humans.
And it's not that he started off angry. Just in the process of making the sign, he became angry.
Writing one thing, thinking one thing, probably muttering another thing under his breath at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I thought the part where the doctor constantly thinking that the soldier was that Danny was a PE teacher just really kind of helped to flesh out his whole anger against soldiers. He's like, you know, instead of, you know, soldiers don't think, they act. That's what they do. There's, you've only got space enough in your head for the offsides rule and something. You know, it kind of tells you why he has this aversion to them. It's like, and you know, I've said that before, and I think I've said it on the show here, that's one of the reasons why I love the Doctor, and that's one of the reasons why I make sure that my kids watch this show, is because they've got superheroes out the butt. You know, they've got Superman and Spider-Man and Batman and all these people that, you know, when they run into a conflict, solution number one, punch it until it goes away. Mm-hmm. And the Doctor is a superhero he really is, who very rarely takes the violent route. His lesson is you need to think things through. There's always a solution that doesn't have to end in violence. And I love that aspect of this show. That's one of the reasons why I like it so much. And I mean, that just kind of gets driven home here in the fact that, you know, soldiers don't think that way. That's not how they're programmed. Your response is to kill something and get it out of the way.
One of the core tenets of the show is to you know, solutions through logic and reason rather than fists and bullets.
Yeah.
Or pew-pews.
So how long do you think it'll be before Danny tells the doctor that he dug 26 wells?
Well, technically, they have to go on a date first. And that could be a fun episode right there.
of having him now that he's actually got clearance to interrupt a date overtly, so he can actually just walk up to the table and say, "You pee, quiet, you come with me." Fish people. They're like fish and people.
Oh, it was a freak shower. Was that seaweed? I said it was freak.
This was a fun one, and I'm just really pleased that it was enjoyable in ways that I was not expecting to. I was expecting this to be a big fight, and we got some of that, but it was really more about some of the resolutions.
Yeah, and it didn't try to be more than it was. That's one of the things that I really liked about it, was it was, okay, we're going to write an episode that's about the interpersonal relationships, and it's not going to be overly serious, so they didn't try and make it too heavy or too lighthearted or too action-packed. It's a fun middle-of-the-season episode that doesn't have to be anything more. Mm. So, yeah, it definitely worked. But yeah.
And this is, I'm trying to think, I want to look through the roster to see whether Moffat's going to be involved in co-writing for anything in the next few episodes. I think we're kind of clear a bit as far as his involvement, which is why we may get some sort of some loose adventures for a while. Because I think, as I'm looking over here, Kill the Moon is just Peter Harness on his own. Episode 8 being Mummy on the Orient Express is just Jamie Matheson. Also episode 9 for Flatline is Jamie Matheson. And then 10 is, which is the Forest of the Night, is Frank Cottrell Boyce. So we don't get Moffat until the 11 and 12, the finale.
Yeah. So I don't know if that means that we won't see Danny Pink, because every time we've seen Danny Pink, Moffat has been at least a co-writer, if not the primary writer.
Well, maybe he trusts them enough, his writers enough, to carry on after he's established the characters in the relationship. He just didn't want them to mess it up at the beginning.
Or it might be that they haven't published the fact that he's going to be the co-writer.
That too.
You know, I don't think that this one was credited for Stephen Moffat up before yesterday, really. When his name popped up on the title credits, I was like, oh, okay, well, he's doing this one too, I guess, because I had looked before and I didn't see him anywhere else. So,
okay,
we'll see how it shapes up. But let's actually talk some viewing figures here. So we,
yay!
I know, it's exciting. Time Heist last week wound up with a 6.99 final. So 6.99 million final viewing figures with an AI appreciation index of 84, which is actually the highest that the show's gotten. It's tied with Into the Dalek, whereas the rest of them have been 82. Such a huge drop, but
it's because of that. Is it that forward flip? That's why.
Exactly. That's what it was.
Is it just me, or is Danny Pink surprisingly hot for a British guy? I mean, like, buff. Most, like, there are hot British guys, but usually they're not as buff as he is.
Okay, so physically, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
For this show, yes, I can get behind that one.
Okay.
And then Caretaker got an overnight viewing figure of 4.89 million, which is actually the lowest. No, I'm sorry, Listen had lower. Listen was 4.8. So, but then, you know, Listen finished out with 7.01 million final, so. It's, you know, we're sitting in that 7 million ever since the Deep Breath. It's all been floating around the 5 million overnight and then 7 million final. So
is this is the final the Live Plus 7?
Yeah, okay. Live Plus 7. And I believe that they include iPlayer figures are not included in the final figure. So that's more than that, but yeah, we'll have to see. It'll be interesting to see if the trend keeps. Because normally there is a dip towards the middle of the series.
Yeah, but you'd expect to probably be seeing that by now.
Yeah, but it might be that, yeah, it's taking a low, because we do have the break that, or we don't have a break this series. It's all going straight, so it might show up a little bit later. Because, you know, people tend to get, oh yeah, Doctor Who's on again. I'll watch it later. Yeah, once you get used to the routine, it's not a matter of, hey, Saturday, we're going to sit down and watch it right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see it dip a little bit, but it seems like it's pretty consistent so far. So.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if it didn't really have a noticeable dip this season, since it's only 12 episodes and there's no break anywhere for people to, like, forget to come back and watch the episode or anything.
Yeah,
like, they might just maintain the numbers all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible.
And it's, you know, they've got so far, if you look at kind of the structure of what they've presented in the season, You know, as far as the, you know, this is the adventure episode, this is the building character episode, this is the, go back to the first one, this is the introduction to the new Doctor episode. They've been keeping it changing relatively frequently enough that you're not going to have someone who might not jive with the episode that aired last week. And you thought, that one in Sherwood Forest, not really my speed. So, and next week from the scenes from next week, it looks like it's going to be a similar kind of thing. So I'm just going to tap out, and if it sounds like it was good later, I'll go back and watch it. It seems like they've had enough of a change up on every week to week transition,
mm-hmm.
so that you're not shaking people off. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that, and I think it's working really well actually, because it's when you look at the episodes that have been divisive, it's, you know, like Into the Dalek had that kind of split, and then Sherwood Forest had that same kind of split, but it was reversed. It was almost like the Rings of Akaten and Cold War last series, where, you know, the half that didn't like this one really loved this one, and the half that loved this one didn't like that one.
Right.
So, but they've been doing a good job of it. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the series shapes up.
Yeah.
Then let's see. We do have a little bit of news, not much. It's actually been a really slow news week. But it was interesting that we got to see Katie Manning back on the TARDIS. The actress who played Joe Grant actually showed up during the filming of the Christmas special and got to wander around the TARDIS with Peter Capaldi.
Oh, the feels.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a great picture of him, you know, with his arm around her and pointing, and they did a great split shot of it where, you know, you got a picture of the Third Doctor with Joe Grant doing the exact same thing in his TARDIS. I mean, complete with the whole red lining on the cape.
Yeah, the flip back coat with the lining. And you could see they pinned his coat back.
Yeah, specifically.
So that would stay exposed. Like a hair clip holding his jacket back so the liner would stay exposed.
Yep. But
she's still working hard. I mean, she's such a recognizable face, and she still, you know, loves getting involved in the cons and things out there. Mm-hmm. She loves speaking out on the show, and she's really well spoken about it too, about her experiences and her time working with both with Pertwee and with the rest of the crew as well. Because remember, Joe got one of those kind of weird send-offs.
Yeah.
That, and when she was gone, and everyone said, well, who's this Sarah Jane thing? This is never going to work. You know, she set the bar pretty high. So.
Yeah. And then what's the... Oh, yay, an extended clip from Kill the Moon.
Yes, for those of you who can't wait to see giant robot spiders and get all that spidery goodness in, Jay will be leaving the room right now. And
yeah, you guys are on your own next week.
I'm not
going to be here. No.
We first found the clip because the Grant Norton show the other evening had someone on the panel that was able to allow them to see about a minute, 5 minutes, six of this. It sort of grabbed right from the middle of an action scene from next week's episode. I saw the link, saw the video out there, shared it with these two so you can take a quick look at it. And Jay, you could tell right there, just that's it. Done. Go. I'm up. See ya. Bye. No, not going to happen.
Yeah, I believe my exact response was, allow me to be the first to say, oh, no.
It's just a television program, Jay.
They can't come out of the TV yet.
Have you watched The Ring? You don't know what these creatures are capable of. They're pure demonic essence.
But they have no souls.
No, it's because the demon ate them.
Oh, well, you got to stay hydrated.
tasty soul.
But you could tell for sure that it was Courtney in this clip. Because I wasn't sure with the little preview at the end of the episode whether that was Courtney or not.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention to the people.
Yeah.
See, that worries me, though. Is it going to be a repeat of Nightmare in Silver where it's like, oh, no, we got to cram this little kid in there because we've had three episodes without a kid?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out. But the sound really reminded me of the Stargate replicator bug thingies.
Yeah, okay, that's where it was. I couldn't place it.
The little clickety clack of their eight demon legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can walk away right now. You guys keep this crap up. Jerks.
I'm going to mail you a little Lego spider in the next week. FYI.
Can you remotely change someone's ringtone?
Just call him and play that on a loop until he hangs up.
Hey guys, I got like seven voicemails on the GPR voicemail this week, but they all, wait a second.
You bastages.
You guys are assholes.
That number, by the way, for those of you who want to call in and leave us with your favorite spider stories.
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead. It's 210-802-1477. So call and let us know what you thought about this episode. Let us know what you expect from the next little eight-legged demon-filled episode. Let us know what your thoughts are on the series as a whole so far.
Or leave 2 minutes of the clickety-clacking sound.
I swear to God, I will end this call right now.
Mandibles. Nothing but mandibles.
Oh, jeez. All right, are we done now?
Almost. Some pig.
Salutations.
All right, this has been episode 105 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, actually, I'm going to be back in 2 weeks. You guys are on your own.
And this is Kier saying, go home and canoodle. Doctor's orders.
And this is Haley saying, we do the weird stuff.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.